That is 824-0853, State versus Enno. And please correct me on the pronunciation there if I didn't get it right. Good morning, counsel. You'll each be given 15 minutes for oral argument. An appellant will then have 5 minutes for rebuttal time. Before beginning your argument, please identify yourself and your client for the record. Can each of you see the time clock on the screen?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Wonderful. With that, counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Thank you. My name is Alex Reichert, and I represent Mr. Eno in this matter. After being arrested for DUI, Mr. Eno was read the implied consent and requested an attorney. Judge Harbat does appear to misstate the facts a little bit in his decision, in that in the fact that the way that it transpired was, and it's clear from the phone call, that he called me in the middle of the night, and I followed my normal procedure. First thing I did was ask him if the officer could hear you, and he said yes. And I said, ask him if you can have a private room. And he said, the officer said, no. Then, can the officer hear me? And he said, no, he can't. But the officer did say that the phone line was being recorded. At this point, I asked him if we could get a line that wasn't recorded. He said, all the lines are recorded. And I asked him to ask the officer if he could use his cell phone. The officer said, no. I asked if he could ask the officer if I could speak with the officer to try and work out an accommodation, and the officer said no to that. At that point, I told Mr. Eno that I can't give you advice because this is on a recorded line. It would waive attorney-client privilege for me to do so, and that I didn't think that it was proper. This is really a case of first impression in Minnesota. There's significant case law that covers officers hearing one side of the conversation, and that being the side of the conversation of the defendant. But there is nothing where they can hear the both sides or even just the attorney alone. And that's where we have a significant issue here. And that's what gave me such significant heartburn in trying to craft a way that I could have any meaningful conversation or give any meaningful advice to my client when I knew that my call could be recorded.
Mr. Riker, can I just clarify the Campbell, and you're referring, when you talk about case law, I assume you're referring to the Campbell decision and the previous held decision. What I'm wondering is, I don't read the decision quite so narrow as you do. You're right. It seemed like the important part was that the officers could not hear what the attorney is saying. And then moreover, from all the case law that were cited in the briefing, it cannot be used in any event, even if it could. But isn't it true here that the facts indicate that no one was listening to the recorded? Certainly one could later. But I think what you're trying to allude to, it's the equivalent of someone, the officer, being able to hear live your voice at the same time you're giving advice to your client. But don't the facts indicate that it was not being listened to?
No, you're right, Your Honor. It was not being listened to, as far as I know, and I have no reason to disbelieve. But that is, in my opinion, worse, because it is now recorded. And from the testimony at the hearing, it is recorded. They don't even know how long they keep it. There is no system for deleting these. And every single officer in the Grand Forks, or in the East Grand Forks Police Department, can listen to that at any time without any record of it happening. That means that any officer can go back for any reason. Say there was an investigation about something else that happened on that evening. Say there was an investigation about something else that Mr. Eno was involved in. All of a sudden, officers can go back and listen to that. And I think that that makes it much worse, not better, than just simply listening to them in this one isolated incident. And then, you know, perhaps then we could say, yeah, you can't use that in this case. It's going to be suppressed. We're going to not allow that to come in. But this is far worse. This is a systematic disregard. They know that it's happening. They do it in every single case. In every case where somebody has talked to a lawyer over this period of time, they have been listening in. And
Here's my question. I mean, so we have the Anderson case, which is a Supreme Court case from 2010, that kind of talks about this recording of attorney-client calls and saying that that may, I think the decision says it may be an intrusion into the attorney-client relationship, but that doesn't automatically translate to a violation of defendant's right to counsel. So I guess what I'm wondering here is, what is the basis of your argument here? Is it a right to counsel, like a that this is violative of the of your client's constitutional right to counsel? For what you're because what you're talking about is the attorney-client, relationship, which is my understanding is the privilege issues are statutory, right? So how do we I'm just trying to piece together, especially looking at the relief that you're looking for, which is suppression of the test results. So how do I link those different issues here?
Yeah, it's directly linked in that this conversation that we were having was under the limited right to counsel. So my client has a limited right to counsel, which is the right to be advised about his test, about the implied consent, about those issues. And it is impossible for me to discharge my duty as an attorney for this defendant or for any defendant to be able to give him any meaningful advice. First of all, I cannot collect information because I know that it's going to be subject to being listened to. And second of all, I can't give him advice again because it's going to be listened to. And I can't, it is directly linked. The questions that need to be asked, the answers that need to be given are directly linked to him taking this test. And that's the reason that the test needs to be suppressed, is because he did not have a meaningful opportunity to consult with an attorney. And the court has recognized that we do need a meaningful conversation with your attorney. Now, they have eroded that over the
Mr. Eckert,
years.
can I ask you to clarify something or respond to this? Do you see a distinction? I think I understand your argument in response to Judge Bentley's question in terms of the constitutional requirement, but do you see a distinction between this scenario we're dealing with, which is a freedman, quote unquote, limited right to counsel to decide a pre-charge investigatory issue of whether to submit to a test versus if you were consulting with him on a case he's already charged and you're his attorney and you're giving advice while he's in custody and it's being recorded. It strikes me that your points earlier that it's worse. I think I could appreciate that if it's more the latter, but here we're dealing with the former, a limited right to counsel in which the court, Supreme Court's already said you don't have a right to a private a phone. Is that a distinction with a difference, or are you arguing there is no distinction given that limited right to counsel in this scenario?
Well, I would argue that that there is no difference. But the Supreme Court has disagreed with me on that, and they believe that we can erode that right to counsel. I disagree that meaningful consultation can be done by just asking yes or no questions, or that when you can hear one side, but that's obviously for another day. But in this case, if we're going to continue to erode that right to counsel, what right is it really even? If we're now saying that the entire conversation can be listened to on both sides and recorded for posterity, then what right is left? Where is there? There, it is clear that there is a limited right. If there is a limited right, what is that? If not, at least that one that we can maintain some privacy in this consultation. because one of the hallmarks of the attorney-client privilege and being able to consult with your attorney, this is sacrosanct. And to continue to erode it now to the point where it can be recorded, there's no justification for it, and there's no reason for it. And that's the other concerning thing.
Ask you just another angle of this. Let's say, which I understand this is not what happened in this case, but let's say that the officers had given him a private room and shut the door, but the call was recorded like it was. They're not actively listening. It's just, and it's a policy. Every single call is recorded. If it had been a private room and recorded, would you have an argument still? Or so does it hinge on the fact that the officer was sitting there?
It's certainly the officer sitting there makes it difficult. The officer, but the recording to me is incredibly offensive as an attorney. The fact that the law enforcement would be allowed to record my phone calls, I think is a gross violation of everything that I've ever learned in law school. It is highly offensive to have that. And I think it is incredibly difficult to try and practice law when the government is listening to what you say. Now, on the other side—
Mr. Reger, let me ask you this. We're an intermediate appellate court. Your position really says, I think the Supreme Court got it wrong. I don't think that we're the court that you can make that argument to. It just doesn't seem like you're asking us to ignore Supreme Court precedent, aren't you?
No, you're not. I thought I made that clear. I apologize. I disagree with that Supreme Court, with the Supreme Court opinions, but you don't have to ignore them. This is all you're doing is refusing to extend what they have already said. What the state is asking you to do is to extend what they've already said, and I'm asking you to stop it.
So I just really want to understand where the point, because where I read Anderson is saying the Supreme Court said you can record these as a matter of course without violating the right to counsel. And then Campbell I see as saying an officer in a DWI situation can sit in the room while somebody's on the phone with their attorney. Is the extension that you're talking about the combination of those, that it's the recording plus the officer sitting there? But if it's either one independently, you would agree that the binding precedent says that that does not violate the right. Is that a way to characterize what you're arguing?
Yes, that is a fair characterization. But also, when we look at the entirety of it, there were also good options available, options that I suggested, options that were suggested to him, using his cell phone being one. And the state is trying to say that if you agree with our position, that it's going to be anarchy, that things are going to be so confusing, that we're never going to be able to figure this out. That's not true at all. This is very simple. All he needs to do is let him use his cell phone. All you have to do is say you cannot have these recorded conversations during these DUI stops. These are bright line rules that would be very easy to say we are refusing to extend the diminishment of the right to counsel, the limited right to counsel. We're refusing to limit it even more, which is what the city and the state are asking for here. And in order to do that, you can make a bright line rule. You can interpret the Supreme Court case law without offending the Supreme Court case law. And so in this case, what I would suggest is, all you have to say is, when this phone call in this case was recorded with these facts, we do not find that was a meaningful consultation with his attorney. Again, there is no explanation from the city or the state why he couldn't use his cell phone. At one point he said officer safety, which I showed to him that there is no officer safety. The defendant's safety, there is no defendant's safety issue here. There is no reason in this day and age when everyone has a cell phone, And certainly in this case, my client had a cell phone that he had already used, that the officer had already let him use to look up my number and to find my number. So to extend that to he can then call me from that number. And Campbell and Friedman have said he can listen to the other side of the conversation. I can be forced to ask yes or no questions, but all he has to do is give him my cell phone. Thank you.
Thank you for your argument. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
We'll wait for the time. Okay, counsel for respondent, you may begin when you're ready. Oh.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Ron Galstead. I'm the city attorney for East Grand Forks. I'm sitting in my office in East Grand Forks. And I believe it's probably fairly apparent that we're diametrically opposed to Mr. Reichert's argument here. Essentially, in this case, his client, Mr. Eno, was properly stopped, arrested, read the Minnesota implied consent advisory down at the East Grand Forks Police Department, and then allowed what we call attorney time to vindicate the limited right to counsel regarding his consultation with Mr. Reichert regarding the implied consent advisory and whether or not he should blow. Now, what happened in this case, and Mr. Reichert brings it up, is the defendant, Mr. Eno, had Mr. Reichert's telephone number in his cell phone. And where I take a little bit of exception to Mr. Reichert saying the East Grand Forks Police Department and police officers systematically are violating these rights, when watching that booking room video, they were anything but that. They were cordial. They went and retrieved Mr. Eno's telephone from the outside of the booking room and outside of the attorney time room. They brought it back. They allowed him to take a look at it, write down his telephone number for Mr. Reichert. And then Officer Douglas actually at one point, so that it wouldn't interfere with the RFI interference on the DMT, he removed it. If you watch the video, he removed it from the room. He brought it back out to Mr. Eno's possessions, and then he returned back into the room. At that point in time, they brought him into the booking room. And in the booking room, they explained the procedure. They provided him with a telephone, told him that this was his time to talk to Mr. Reichert. When there was some conversation going back and forth, it was specifically notified by Officer Douglas that the line was a recorded line. And if you look through the transcript and all of the lines in the city of East Grand Forks Police Department are recorded lines. Now, the reason that they do it, and it was touched upon, is a couple of things. One is evidentiary issues, and two, every line is. Where I take exception to Mr. Reichert's argument is the act of listening. If you look at the transcript, and if you look at Judge Harbaugh's memorandum decision, there's no act of listening here. He continued to state that the city of East Grand Forks, the police officers, were listening in on the conversation. They were not. Not one time in Officer Douglas's time with the East Grand Forks Police Department has anybody ever heard, according to him, one of these telephone calls. Now, the court, especially with Zoom now, and all the technology that's being utilized, understand there's technology issues. And the video that was from the audio and the video that was in the booking room, sometimes that doesn't work. Also, if you looked at Campbell and Held, they indicate, you know, you can use this as impeachment issues. And sometimes the defendants bring up disingenuous arguments. And at that point in time, if the video is down, there's other technical issues, this evidentiary telephone recording could possibly be retrieved and then show that attorney time was allowed, that there was a meaningful opportunity to speak with his attorney. And the police officers, as well as the city of East Grand Forks, can't, I guess, dictate what Mr. Reichard feels comfortable with in advising his client regarding this limited right to counsel, specifically for the purpose of determining, understanding the law around giving a breath test and potentially the repercussions if he does not. It's a very limited scope.
Can I just ask about that kind of that intersection of those laws about recording with the Anderson, and then we have Campbell, which is about being in the room. And what I understand Mr. Reichert's argument to be is that somehow, you know, the combination of those two tip this into a new level that the Supreme Court hasn't addressed yet. And we would be extending kind of the limited right as opposed to just following precedent. Can you respond to that? Do you agree with that? I'm guessing probably not, but maybe you could explain why.
Certainly, we do not agree with that. We believe that they don't, that the Supreme Court has been very clear in this matter, is that if in fact there is anything that's overheard, that the way to handle this is not suppressing the test. It would be suppressing any evidence or fruit of the evidence that would have been discovered based upon those telephone conversations. That was not the case. And we believe that under Anderson says that just the attorney violating the attorney-client privilege doesn't qualify under this. And under the Friedman held Campbell matters, a private telephone call is not necessary. A private booth is not necessary because of the effervescent of the evidence that we're trying to present. And that if in anything happened, it would be suppressed and it couldn't be used anyways. So there's no prejudice to Mr. Eno. Now, because and I have to say that I respect Mr. Riker very much. To be honest with you, anybody in town, I refer to Mr. Reichert for representation if there needs to be done. However, and in this case, Mr. Reichert understands the law. Mr. Reichert understands the fact that the result here is suppression of the any evidence, not the test. Mr. Reichert also should have understood the fact that a private telephone wasn't required, and that he could have given Mr. Eno any number of directions or advice without violating his attorney-client privilege.
That's Mr. Galston, could I ask you that there appeared to be some evidence in the record about their policy and why they don't allow private phones, but it wasn't quite clear to me, and I'm just curious if you have a better explanation for us of why in a situation like this it seemed I didn't realize in this day and age I assumed it was fairly common that people they carry their phone like he did here would just allow him the phone call because he's simply calling to inquire whether to take a test. Can you explain that better, what public safety risk or evidentiary risk there is by not allowing someone to use their phone?
Well, I guess the primary issue would be the RFI interference that could possibly cause in the DMT machine. When the officer comes in, the DMT operator comes in, he immediately starts setting up that machine. And what ends up happening is you've got a policy in place, and it's all determined on that 2 hours from the date of from the time of arrest. And depending upon that time frame, I know Mr. Reichert indicated earlier that in his cross-examination that there may or may not have been any issue with the amount of time left to take this, but each case individually is different. If you have a systematic policy that indicates you use this phone, you take the test, you don't have to, on each and every case, worry about whether or not you're going to have that test result, the DMT test result, end up with an RFE interference failure and have to restart everything. And I do understand that every line is in the police department happens to be recorded. However, this is truly done at the in the booking room, and there's safety issues, not necessarily specifically about the cell phone, but trying to find a private room, trying to get out of that little area. They come in with any number of defendants. They bring them into a secured area with their police cars. They bring them into this booking room. It's all kind of a secured area. When you leave that, you end up basically going down the hallway to the jail cells. And if you were going to allow them to do a number of different things and change this policy up, they end up into an area where civilians could be, other officers could be. And knowing the fact that, and I'm not saying this was Mr. Eno, but under a lot of other circumstances, that is a safety issue. That becomes a safety issue to a lot of different officers if somebody that happened to be turned violent would ultimately end up in that area. So, and I hope, Judge Slater, that I kind of answered your question, but I believe that this just basically comes down to the fact that the city of East Grand Forks followed the law that is in place at this time, that there needs to be the ability by freedmen to have that limited right to counsel, that the limited right to counsel was provided, that vindicates the police officers in this case and in every case. And then Mr. Eno actually provided that test. And we believe that if you go through Judge Harbaugh's memorandum, it succinctly describes that. And I'm sure that this panel probably knows, but Judge Harbaugh himself is following the Supreme Court law, as well as Judge Harbaugh was a criminal defense attorney for many, 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 many years. And he's the one that actually read this, understood it, and then issued a decision denying the motion to suppress, and indicated that the resolve here would be, if there was anything that was going to be used at trial, that would have been gleaned from this telephone conversation, whether it would have been in the booking room or this passively recorded telephone call, the way to handle that would be to suppress any of that evidence at trial. The one thing that I want to say is that these telephone calls, they're not marked for anybody and everybody to go back in and try to listen to them. They're basically dated. They have different stamps on them, and they're held in the computer room or in a file. And Mr. Reichert makes it seem like anybody and everybody and their brother can just log into it and listen to these things. There's no reason to do that. They are held in abeyance in case there's a need to record to listen to them. And in the 25 years that I've done this, I haven't heard or seen one of them. I've never seen anything. And that was the same testimony of Officer Douglas. Unless there's any other questions, we would just be asking that the court affirm the decision of Judge Harbaugh. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you for your argument. Mr. Reichert, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. One of the chief concerns that I have in this case is the diminishment of the right to counsel. And one thing that Mr. Galstead did say was that we need to have these recordings so that they can be retrieved if there is an issue. That scares me more than anything. The idea that, we just happen to record these and nobody ever sees them is one thing. But this is exactly what I caution this court about, is if you allow this to stand, it will become commonplace, if not the procedure, for these law enforcement agencies to be recording lawyers, to be going back and listening to them anytime that they think that they can gain an advantage or that they think that they need something. or they think that there is some perceived issue. Now, also,
hasn't the Supreme Court already allowed the record the calls to be recorded? I that's been decided, hasn't it, Mr. Reichert, that it's all right to record these under these limited circumstances?
I don't think that it has been decided yet. I don't think that in this situation that we have here, which is we have an officer listening to one side, them recording every single call without limitation, and there being no procedure in place whatsoever to either see if someone has listened to it or to limit anyone's access to it.
Didn't they address that when they said if someone listens to something they shouldn't listen to, the remedy is to suppress whatever they learned from listening to that, not to suppress the test? They've said that clearly.
When they say that the remedy is you can suppress the test, that is not doing anything. That is not allowing a free exchange of information. And I don't read the Anderson decision that they have said carte blanche, they can record anything in a situation where there is a DUI arrest, that they can record every single phone call for no reason. And especially in a case like this, where there was a perfectly simple way that they could have avoided recording the phone conversation. I don't think that the Supreme Court case law is saying it's the best practice for police officers to be recording conversations with attorneys. That's certainly not what they're saying. And that's certainly what happened in this case. I made a good faith effort with the officer to try and come up with a way that we didn't have to do this. They act like it is.
Mr. Eckert, just following up Judge Flory's question, it does seem like the case law of Mr. and the Anderson case is one of those that focuses more on the result of a recorded conversation. There's factors to be considered whether a Sixth Amendment right has been intruded upon. So wouldn't what you be asking us to rule, it sounds like you're asking us to rule that the recording itself, in other words, per se, a recording is a constitutional violation. Wouldn't that be a new law that you'd be asking us to rule on?
I don't think that would be a new law. I mean, obviously that is what I would like at the end of the day, but I don't think this court has that power. But the Supreme Court would hold that power. But what this court can say is looking at these facts, looking at the options that were available, looking at what the officer did, what the police department does, and looking at case law, this does not provide any sort of a meaningful exchange of information. It's not just that what was said could be used. It's that I was not able to have a meaningful conversation with him under this set of facts. And I offered a set of facts that would have been very easy, not difficult for them to do, not a danger to anyone, not impeding the police at all. RFI is only going to affect the test while he's blowing. He's not going to be blowing while he's talking to me. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your time and your argument today and your briefs in this matter. The case has been submitted, and we will issue an opinion within the timeline provided by statute.